B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning. Bob Cooney. Jamie Lynch. And Sam Wilson. Now, start your day with Farzetta and Trey on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome in. Farzetta and Trey in the morning. We had some an interesting Sixers game last night because the Sixers gave us a little scare. But I heard a call that Bob, you and Jamie had in the 5 o'clock hour, and it echoed the same sentiment that a lot of fans had last night before the Sixers-Nets game in South Philly. So, Trey, I'm kind of roaming around talking to fans, getting their midseason grades more or less on the team, including Brett Brown, and doing a little bit for NBC Sports Philly and all that stuff. And
working Brent, one of your mini jobs?
Yeah, what? I went out there and I washed people's windows in the parking lot, too, just to make sure that everyone
served
was okay.
Served them a couple of drinks.
Just doing what you got
to
do.
Went to the bartender.
Make ends meet, Trey.
Hey, little toots.
Hey, little toots got to eat. You know what I'm saying? Formula's expensive. No,
formula is really expensive.
Ridiculous. Am I right? By the way, to the guy that's asking, is it Kev that's asking us on Twitter right now if he should wake his wife up or not?
Don't do it.
Yeah, don't, dude, just let her sleep.
She's 9 months pregnant.
Here's the thing. He's got a 2-year-old. You should learn this by now.
Wait, why does he want to wake her up?
It's his daughter's birthday. So he said, do I wake my daughter up to wish her a happy birthday before I leave for work?
How old is she?
Two.
About two.
And have my wife deal with the repercussions of waking her up early or just wish her a happy birthday when I get home. I said, wait till you get home.
Yeah.
Text her.
Text that 2-year-old.
You know what? Leave a card. Happy birthday, sweetheart. You know, something like that. That'd be nice. But I'm walking around the Wells Fargo Center yesterday, and anybody that gave Brett Brown a bad grade apologized. And I hear the, like, well, I don't know if it was the first call you guys had or not, but
it was. It was John in Maryland.
He goes, fire. He's like, Brett, I'm sorry. And Bob, you jumped right on it. Why is there an apologetic type of attitude surrounding Brett Brown? I was thinking about this. I've never really heard, like, maybe Charlie Manuel, but Charlie Manuel won a World Series. And some people were like, I'm sorry, you know, I love Charlie and everything, but we should have won 2 or 3 World Series, whatever it might have been. And, you know, Ryan Sandberg. People were like, oh, get Ryan Sandberg there, right? Certainly Ruben Amaro Jr. felt that way. But that's the only other time I really ever heard, I'm sorry. Like, and that's a guy that won here. Brett Brown hasn't won here. He went through the suffering, but he knew what he was getting into when he signed up.
I think that's why, though, honestly.
I mean, that has to be. I mean, it's the real only reason.
That's the hugest reason.
I think
of
people
why,
saw him suffer along with us, so he was like almost a partner in suffering.
I think that's how people view it. It has to be. But everybody that said something negative about Brett Brown that gave him a grade of anything lower than a C, they're like, I'm sorry, but this guy. Or it was almost remorseful. It was, I'm sorry, but he's got to go.
Mm.
And then last night, you watch the Sixers play, and as I mentioned, they struggled a lot early in the game. The Nets, who are a sub-500 team, who had Kyrie back in the lineup last night, they struggled throughout the game, and it wasn't really until late in the fourth quarter, Tobias Harris got red hot. He had a couple of threes early as well from Furkan Korkmaz, and you didn't really see this team take control of the game until late. 34 points for Tobias Harris last night, a great game. Was hitting shots from the outside, was hitting shots from the perimeter, was driving, setting up teammates, like doing everything you want to see from Tobias Harris on a nightly basis. But really, you didn't see them take control until late. You had Matisse Thybulle come out in the starting lineup. When I saw he was announced, I actually took in the first quarter of the game at the Wells Fargo Center. He comes running out, and Matisse Thybulle. And I'm like, okay, all right, get this guy going. Let's see what he can do. And I thought he played very well, played his typical game. And then Al Horford came out and continued to struggle. And I know we've mostly been focused on Ben Simmons and his development and his struggles from the outside and all that stuff. But Al Horford has been a guy that, for the most part of this season, has been disappointing. And when we saw him play with Joel Embiid, it didn't work nearly as well as we expected it to or wanted it to. And now you're watching a guy who is getting open looks, just miss. And it's not a matter of scheme as much as it's just a matter of a guy looking like he is ice cold. We watched Tobias Harris go for an 0 for 22 slump, 0 for 23 slump from beyond three. The arc from three. Al Horford was 2 of 9. First problem, the 9.
Yeah.
And second problem, only 2 of all the open looks he had.
But to me, that goes to scheme. Why is he shooting? Why are 9 of his 14 shots threes? Mm. Stop. They had so many series last night where they come down and within like 8-10 seconds of shot clock, throw it to Al Horford, who's open from three, and he's bombing. I don't care if he's open from three. I don't want him shooting right from there as often as he does.
I don't understand why that is such a big part of the game plan. Al Horford, if he's comfortable doing that, then there needs to be some consistency there. But if you're going to have any type of center on this roster that is going to be a back-to-the-basket type of guy, Al Horford should be that guy because it's struggled so much from the outside that he needs to be the type of guy that you can rely on to be your back-to-the-basket type of center. We know that when Joel Embiid comes back, that is not going to be how he's playing the game. For the vast majority of the season, it's not going to be. For the vast majority of his career. And if you read his story on the Player Tribune, you'll understand that probably better than you ever will. Because what he wrote out there was incredible, and we'll get into that in a second. But to focus on last night's game, the struggles early on seemed like they were avoidable if you just put guys in their comfort zone. And a guy like Al Horford is extremely comfortable within 10 feet from the basket. He can shoot the three occasionally. Yeah, sure, he can get hot from time to time. But the vast majority of his game has to be from 10 feet and in. And that's one of the biggest glaring, that's one of the most glaring things in last night's game that I think a lot of fans had issues with. A guy that was struggling the way he was struggling from the outside, you never really worked down low. He too was setting up guys from time to time. He had a great pass from the foul line to the block to Tobias Harris, who had an easy tip in. That was a piece of cake. But other than that, you're watching a guy who is most comfortable right by the rim and you're taking him away from it. At what point do you just start saying, you know what, let's play basics here. You're most comfortable there, that's where you're going to be. Yeah, Ben Simmons, fine. You're most comfortable driving to the rim. You do that all night long as the defense will let you do it. Tobias Harris, mid-range game, have at it. At what point do you do that? I feel like the only person that's very much playing within himself and the only person playing really within his role is Matisse Thybulle.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only person I see on a consistent basis when he's out there playing well within himself, not doing too much, not doing a little bit, but doing really whatever his talent level lets him do. He never seems uncomfortable on the court. Other guys seem like they're being asked to play a different role. That's what jumps out to me, especially in the first three quarters of last night's game, and really we've seen throughout the season.
Yeah, and I still don't get what they're doing offensively, schematically. And they scored 117 points last night. So nitpicking, yeah, that's what it is. But I still see an offense that's a high pick and roll, three other guys standing around. Hopefully it works. The pick is never good. As a picker, what you want to do is get the defender off of his line of defense. So make him stop for a step, make him miss a half a step, whatever it may be. The Sixers look like they're setting slip picks all the time. Slip picks only work after you've established that you can set a good solid pick. So it's like a minuscule part of a game is setting a good hard pick, but it sets everything else up if you're running a pick and roll offense.
But here's the other part of that. Al Horford's not a guy that I expect to struggle Philly Full just hit me up on Twitter here. Jay Rich as well. Yeah, he's been phenomenal as well. But you look at a guy like Al Horford, he should be able, with all his experience, veteran and Uncle Al, whatever you want to call him, he seems to struggle in the pick game as well. He'll get away with moving screens. Not nearly like a guy like Joel Embiid will get away with it from time to time, but Al Horford, with his footwork, he should be in the right spot at the right time. With his veteran leadership, with all his experience and all that stuff, he should be in the right spot to set that pick. One of the first plays of the game for the Sixers, I see him pop out to the top of the key to set a pick for Ben Simmons, and he's pushing his hands out, like away from his body to just try to stay with the guy he's trying to set the screen on. That's bad X's and O's right there.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it comes back to what could just be amounted to bad coaching. And that's what it adds up to be. Whether you're Al Horford and you've been in the league, whatever it's been now, 12 years, or you're a guy like Matisse Thybulle who's fresh into the league, you should have enough experience to know how to set a pick. You should play enough basketball to set a pick. But it just seems like you go down the list, you go down the roster, you really go through the plays of the game, and it just seems like it's not fundamentally sound basketball.
Yeah, and I know in the NBA you don't have time to do this and all, but like as I'm watching last night, it's almost like you can tell somebody, all right, go run a high pick and roll, and then off of that we're going to do this. But then you don't dive into the, wait a second, hold on. Here's how I want the pick and roll to work. Like, Ben, I need you really to come off his hip on this. And Tobias or Al or whoever it is, hold the pick. Hold it. You never see it with the Sixers. They get pick and rolled to death. They are a horrible pick and roll defending team. Horrible. Teams get whatever they want out of it. Sixers don't. And you're the biggest team in the league. You give up more alley-oops than I've ever seen any team give up on the pick and roll. And you never run one. How often have we seen a pick and roll for a dunk with the Sixers?
Few and far between.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And when it happens, it's right around the rim, and it seems like it happens by accident.
And I'm sorry, but 6'11", Ben Simmons might be the most athletic guy on the team. I think I'd run Josh Richardson with a pick and roll off of him every once in a while, try some different things, make a defender decide, yeah, I know I got to collapse to the basket because that's the only place where Ben's effective. Okay, hold a screen properly. If the other guy drops off, then Josh Richardson has a wide open 15-footer. It's not really that complicated.
No, it's not. And it's something that we've seen time and time again, which is why I go back to the idea of I'm sorry. If you see these problems over and over again, why do people feel like they have this remorsefulness when it comes to Brett Brown? And it has to be because that you watched him play and watched him coach a team that was so unbelievably terrible, and you saw him on the sidelines trying to get the absolute most out of all these guys, and you saw him sweating, you saw him next to crying and all that stuff while you were home going, God, this basketball's terrible. You were suffering while he was suffering. But now it's a matter of you're spending money on a roster here, about $130 million on this roster. And right now they're not nearly as good as you thought they'd be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, $130 million and people are talking about additions at the trade deadline. Al Horford, Tobias Harris, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Josh Richardson, a rookie that's producing for you, a good guy to have off the bench, and James Ennis. Like, all these guys are actually doing well. How old Neto? Trey Burke's giving you good minutes? And it's still, they need more help. Really? All this? $130 million on the payroll this year alone? Skyrockets to $147 million, I believe, next year? And you're talking about adding to this roster? I need more out of the roster I have because that's what the money's telling me. If I'm spending that money, I need as much out of this roster as possible. I'm not against making a trade acquisition. I'm not against that at all. I'm just saying we can't get more out of what we got now.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, coming over the bridge the other day, there's a guy that I talk to about Sixers all the time. He's like, oh, they got to, you know, get better on the bench. You got to get somebody coming off the bench, real good shooter. I said, okay, how are you going to do that? He says, you got to make a trade. I said, all right, who are you giving up? And he's like, well, Zaire Smith and Furkan. And I'm like, dude, they have no value.
Yeah, dude, all right.
As much, and people say that, oh, make this trade, you got to get him. They have no tradable commodities right now.
Yeah, I don't know
to
who
get
they,
a piece.
Yeah, I don't know who they give up.
Zaire Smith.
Zaire is
like,
the first
on,
guy.
Dude.
And what's Zaire doing here again?
Yeah.
Who brought Zaire here?
Yeah. Where is he?
He's there. That would be our man. That'd be Brett Brown. Also, I need to get this in here. First off, Bob, go see 1917.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
That needs to happen.
Okay. Saturday night, I think I am going to the movies. I'm breaking the 20-year drought.
Wow.
I know, it hurts to
Since
say,
Titanic.
Titanic was the last one.
Since the Titanic went down.
Yeah.
Since the Titanic.
I was supposed to be on that ship, by the way, but sorry.
By the way, the Titanic went down only 5 years.
So now?
Now, Mark's making fun of my age. So
I am not making fun of your age.
A little bit.
Making fun of the fact you haven't been to a movie since 1998.
Yeah, that's make funnable.
Was it 98 or not? Yeah, it was
98. Yeah.
So 1917, that was only 5 years after the Titanic, actually. So
there you go.
So right, it all comes full circle.
Wow. Yeah.
So no, go see that movie. Okay. Whatever Donna tells you, say no. Say babe.
Say Donna.
Say babe.
She said she wanted to go see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I'm like, that's not in the theaters anymore. And she looks at me and she says, see what you've done to me? So I said, I'll pick the movie.
Go see 1970.
All right. All right, I'm in.
I've never watched a movie and loved it so much, but could not say anything else about it because like it ruins a lot of the movie.
All right.
That's all. I basically, go see the movie. You won't regret it. It's amazing.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Definitely go check it out.
So you got to do that.
You got to watch Split.
I have to watch Split. That has to happen.
Jamie?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I brought much shame. I do. You've been telling me for like a year to watch it. And...
But on top of all those other things to watch, who in this room, on this program, I should say, watched the Aaron Hernandez docuseries?
Oh, yeah.
All three episodes.
You binged it?
I haven't watched all three of it yet.
I binged
watched two,
it.
And then I was on three and went to sleep.
I stayed up too late.
It's a three-part docuseries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How, what, 45 minutes, an hour?
Hour.
You had 3 hours to kill?
I'm not proud of my actions.
I haven't
what I did was
in.
I had the Sixers on the iPad in my lap on the Xfinity Stream app, and Addy and I were watching Aaron Hernandez on the big screen. Since we're in the trust tree, that's how I rolled last night.
Wow, okay.
But it was such a good series, though, man.
It was excellent.
It was very well put together.
Very well done.
I don't doubt that.
I knew all the details because I was kind of like obsessed with the case at the time. So I read up a lot. The Boston Globe had a podcast about it. I listened to some of that. So like I knew all the details. But if you don't know the details of the case and like the history of everything, it has to be mind-blowing.
Graf called me yesterday and was like, hey, how's the series? I'm like, dude, yeah, you got to watch
it.
Yeah,
he was texting me last night. He's like, I can't stop watching.
Yeah.
My jaw's been on the floor for 3 hours.
Dude, it's
top notch. For a docuseries, it's awesome.
I got some family coming into town tonight, so I'm not going to be watching today. But I'm putting off the inevitable. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
The family might want to watch it.
I don't know if that's good, like, because my cousin's coming into town to meet my daughter. I don't think I'm going to.
No, it's good.
Yeah, it'd be all right.
Yeah. Some murder, some bloody sheets. You know, just like good, wholesome stuff.
Steve, hold Emmanuel up. Hold on. Just be quiet for a second and watch this part about murder.
Yeah, Addie loved it.
Yeah, I don't know.
She loves like murder and Dateline and 48 and like that stuff. So it's kind of up her alley. But
here's the thing, though. I don't feel like there's anything I've watched on Netflix like that's a docuseries that I've had interest in. And I was like, well, that was poorly done. You know what I mean?
True.
Now I'll watch it. Like I said, I'll watch it eventually. But you highly recommend it.
Yes.
Bob, did you dip into it at all?
No,
the
I did
Aaron
not.
Hernandez. What is it called? No. The Aaron Hernandez story? What do we got here?
I was actually live tweeting during the Sixers game last night. Yeah.
The only thing I didn't like about it was the intro, where they made it look like a James Bond type movie.
The music was a little weird.
Yeah, it was a little weird.
Yeah, I all agree right. with you.
But recommended.
Highly.
Oh, yeah.
And you haven't watched the final episode yet, Trent?
No, I haven't.
All right, we'll get there.
Fell asleep on it. It's like around 11.
Flipped on Messiah at the same time.
Right, that's done. I'm done.
All right. So we'll get people's review on that. And Trey, I have some good news for you. It worked.
Okay. That's good.
No. It worked.
What's that?
So yesterday, Bob, we're prepping for the show. And I look over at my man, Trey. And he put down a blue chew on the computer. And he just left it there, prominently displayed.
Yeah.
And I look over and I'm like, what are you doing? And he goes, here's my plan. I'm going to leave blue chews all over the place. And I'm going to mark it. As Bob looks around the studio.
I'll be right back.
And he goes, I'm going to leave blue chews in certain areas, and I'm going to check those areas to see who took them.
Yeah. So if we see mice running around with...
That's right. The blue chew is gone.
See a mice coming in saluting Trey. We're in trouble.
So I remain... at my computer, and I'm laughing at this point, and I was like, you're a brilliant man. And he leaves it prominently displayed. So after the show, I go back to that computer. We have a little meeting. I go back to the computer, and I sit there, and I'm working away, you know. And I look over at Jamie, and he gets up from his computer, and he walks over, and he goes, oh, hey, a blue chew. And I'm like... I was like a hunter in the woods. I was like, don't move.
He's approaching the food. Like,
the beast is approaching the trap. Anything can happen. And Jamie lifts the blue chew up and goes, huh. Well, I've always been curious. And I go, oh my God, if Trey was here right now. And I was like, don't say anything. And then Jamie was like, oh, I'll just put it back. And I was like, ah! It got away.
It's in my pocket.
All right, Jamie.
Gotcha. How many did you leave around? A few?
It's like a scavenger hunt. There's just blue chews hidden all over the place.
I'll tell you what I'm doing on breaks.
things are going to get freaky here at 97.5. There's people walking around with... by the way, now I can't be sure. Did we check the audio? Speaking of what a blue chew could do, did we check the audio of Tom McGinnis last night around 7:26?
Oh, no, I forgot about
you jerk. All right. Maybe Sam can look for this. Because yeah, I tried looking for it as well. I couldn't load the sound, unfortunately. I can't be sure. But I'm pretty sure After a Nets miss last night, I think Tom McGinnis said, that's a boner for that shooter.
Oh, jeepers.
I can't be sure, but I'm pretty sure. That's what I heard as I was leaving the Wells Fargo Center.
We got action here at the center.
Last night during the game. I can't.
You mentioned it, though, partner. He likes to slap around the beef.
We'll check the audio. That's what I'll say. We'll check the audio. Let's get Mike and Delran up here. Mike, what's happening, buddy?
Wow. the last 3 minutes, woof, I didn't see that coming. I got nothing for it.
No worries, buddy.
Oh, man, I could just imagine you sitting there looking like that guy who creeps behind the bushes watching Jamie try to take that blue chew. That's hilarious.
Entrapment!
The beast is approaching the trap.
Yeah. I can't stand up anymore right now. I just got to sit down.
Maybe a couple hours, guys.
You guys grab me water, I can't get up. I don't usually like to do the whole trade scenario thing, but I have a trade that if things aren't ironed out before the trade deadline, I'd like to see Elton Brand make two moves.
So in two and a half weeks.
Two and a half weeks, right. Two moves, and I think they make sense for everyone involved. The first move is I'm calling Cleveland, and I'm sending Tobias Harris for Kevin Love straight up. Contracts are the same. Kevin Love wants out. Tobias Harris is a little younger. You want a guy that's going to shoot? Kevin Love's going to shoot threes. Second move I'm making, I'm taking Al Horford, unprotected first, and a plethora of all these second-round picks that we're supposed to value, and I'm calling New Orleans, and I'm getting J.J. Redick and Etwan Moore and whatever other fat contract they need to throw in to make up for Horford. And then, that's it. I'm lining that starting lineup up with Kevin Love and J.J. Redick, or I'm taking Redick off the bench, and if Ben Simmons won't shoot, and if Tobias Harris can't shoot and make any shots, and Al Horford's going 2 for 9, then I'm putting guys on the floor that can shoot, because that's obviously the offense we want to run.
Well, Mike, with that lineup that you just threw out, they better shoot because they can't cover a damn soul.
Well, you still got Thibault, Simmons, and Mike Scott. You know, you still got Joel Embiid. You still got What's that for?
That was to you on your trade proposals, Mike.
That was a literal poo-pooing. That was a poo-pooing.
I'm going to have a starting five that has Kevin Love and Al Horford on the floor trying to cover some bigs.
Al Horford got traded.
That's right.
He was in New Orleans.
That was your second trade. Okay. If you get both of them to go off. Yeah, no, I don't like that team defensively at all.
Well, if you guys don't like it, I hope one of you just trip on a blue chip.
That would be great. I can't go into work tomorrow. I hurt myself. What happened? I slipped on a blue chew. 610-632-0975. I know a lot of people are going to have the trade scenarios, and I get that. But again, I can't help but think of all the talent that was acquired in this offseason, including Josh Richardson and including Al Horford, and I know he's had his struggles. While you have Ben Simmons and JoJo's out right now, and you drafted a rookie who is giving you great minutes, I can't for the life of me look at this team and go, oh, we need more talent. I mean, you're always looking to add, but to look at it as it'll be the end-all, be-all for a turnaround this season where they'll play as well on the road as they've been at home, I can't look at that. That's where I have to look at the head coach. That's where I have to look at the GM and say, you guys need to get in a room and talk about what you want this team to be. Because I really thought that the objective in the offseason was to put a Sixers team together that was going to play some bully ball. You have some tough guys on this team. You got some tough defenders on this team. How about transitioning that to a little bit of maybe on the offensive side of things, where you play just as tough as you do on defense, you play that tough on offense as well. Instead of having Al Horford on the perimeter for 9 threes when he's been ice cold all season, why not? Just why not have that Uncle Al, that 33-year-old guy with that dad strength, as we like to say, play down low on the blocks a little bit. I'm not saying back to the basket all the time, 90s center or anything like that. I'm talking about having a guy that just can play the best part of his game in the most consistent way, which is when he's within 10 feet of the basket. 610-632-0975. My man Belial, we'll talk to you. We got Al, we got Lance, we got B-Hawk. Coming up, we're going to rattle off for you some of the quotes from Joel Embiid's story. If you didn't read this Players Tribune story yesterday, I'm telling you, you missed a lot. We'll catch you up on it. If you haven't heard it, I didn't realize his brother was that young.
Oh, yeah.
That is absolutely incredible. We'll get into that in a minute. And why Joel Embiid really does have that driving force and why he was crying when he walked off the court in Toronto last year. Time of the Fanatic, 621.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Is this your doing? Is this one of yours, Trey?
All of it is.
How dare I?
Most of it. You know, I record probably 10, 15 songs a day sometimes. When we first started out, I was getting there.
You're putting in the work.
Yeah.
As they done do say.
Yeah.
Do tell you the fine 6 o'clock hours brought to you by United Rentals Power and HVAC for all your power generation and HVAC rentals in the tri-state area. Visit UnitedRentals.com. Coming up, we'll let you hear a little of the Joel Embiid quotes from his story. But I know my man Belial in South Philly's got something on the Sixers. What's up, Belial?
Hey, first I want to say it was nice meeting you, Mark. Finally,
yeah, man. Same to you and your son.
Yeah, putting a voice to the face, and I want to apologize too. Not for Brett Brown Gray, but because my son didn't know who the mascot was. I have to apologize.
No, no worries, brother. No worries at all, man. You guys had the piping hot takes, though, waiting for me.
Oh, man, my man. All right, so I want to put the rest real quick. All these Ben Simmons haters about going to the basket and not shooting.
Okay.
I'm 57 years old. Growing up, the game was outside in. Brett Brown don't play that way. It's inside out for him. So when Ben Simmons penetrate, the name of the game for Brett Brown, throw it out to the three-pointers. That's why Al Horford had 9 threes, because that's how he plays. He plays for people to go inside, penetrate, then throw it out for the three. This is why the Sixers are not going to win, because of the scheme. The scheme that this guy runs, and I watched it on TV, but being at that game last night, that was my second time this year at a game. Being at that game last night, I just watched Brett Brown, and this is the scheme that he runs. He runs inside out, and we don't have the shooters for that. He don't care who it is. He just tell them to jack it up, and that's what they do. And this is why the Sixers is not going to win, and they don't play the smash mouth bully ball that he said we was going to play, because that's not his scheme.
Mm-hmm. No, that's certainly what it looks like, Belial. Great to meet you too, man. My best to your son.
Thank you.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Yeah, Belial's one of the guys I bumped into last night that I was interviewing before the game.
What was his grade for Brett? Did he say?
I think he gave him a D.
Okay.
Yeah, it was not a positive. No. But it was along the lines that we were talking about earlier of the I'm sorry. And it really does seem like Elton Brand, and it seems like Elton Brand acquired Al Horford and Josh Richardson and re-upped with Tobias Harris, and they let Jimmy Butler walk, supposedly. And it seemed like all that happened, and he and Brett never had a meeting about how they were going to approach the season. It really seems like that, because the talent right now is not being dictated to the scheme. In football, or it's not dictating the scheme. In football, we talk about this all the time. Oh, why is this coach? And we talked about it a lot with Big Red. We talked a lot about it with Andy, Trey, mm-hmm. where we'd say, it doesn't seem like you, for instance, you have this big arm quarterback in Donovan McNabb. Why are you putting him in a box, so to speak, and have him play this West Coast offense when you can, you know, he could bomb the ball downfield? And it wasn't until you guys really started bastardizing the West Coast offense, was stretching the field a lot more with, it started with Todd Pinkston a little bit, and then obviously T.O. came in here, and it was a whole new ball game. But it was, why are you square peg round holing this, right? That's what it seemed like. And you could say the same thing about this scheme with Brett Brown and this team, because you don't have the shooters to shoot as many threes as they're shooting. And I know they're not off the charts. We went over the numbers yesterday. I think they're 25th in the league in three-point attempts. But it still seems like a lot for a team with Al Horford, Furkan Korkmaz, who you're only trying to bring along, and even Tobias Harris, who has not been... The bread and butter of his game has not been three-point shooting. So why are you trying to square peg round hole this right now with a team that is not nearly good enough to shoot as many threes as they do?
I don't know. And Brett's saying for years, it's the way of the NBA. It's the way he sees the game being played. I understood it. I understood that that's what he was getting towards. Then you build this team, which is the antithesis of what Brett saw the way the game was to be played. Mm-hmm. They're quite simply, no, they're not. They're not playing to their strength. It's almost like the Tennessee Titans having Ryan Tannehill throw the ball 45 times a game when you have Derrick Henry in the backfield. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, that's kind of the way they're playing the game, you know? Ben Simmons is elite at one thing offensively, and that's getting to the rim. Well, not just one thing, but one of the ways is getting to the rim. But you've told him to go to the rim and look out, as our last caller was saying. Look at Bilal Hussein. Look out. Play inside out as opposed to attacking the rim. Mm-hmm. You're taking away one of the great things he does offensively because, in my mind, the Sixers think an attempted three-pointer is your best offensive strategy.
Mm. It's wild to me. 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975, and it seems to be most glaring on the road for whatever reason. I don't know if they just can't get comfortable. I don't know what the deal is. But real quick, the story that came out on Players Tribune by Joel Embiid, and I have no doubt this is all tied. This has got to be tied into the shoe release, right? Extra pub?
Yeah.
For the big man?
I guess.
But he comes out with a story on Players Tribune, and it was a really interesting story. And if you're just a basketball fan, not even a Sixers fan, I think it's an interesting story. But he comes out, and one of the first things he talks about is trash talking. Before we get to the more dramatic stuff, he talks about trash talking. We're pretty good at talking, myself included, but it's not enough just to talk. You got to walk it. You got to bring it every single night, and that includes me too. When he's talking about the team's effort, people will question that. Well, he's talking about how he's got to bring it every single night. He can't be held scoreless against a team like the Raptors in a big game, right? Exactly. He's got to go out there and bring it. And then things shift a little bit. And I'll say, a lot of the story had to do with his own personal struggles.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have had to go through, God forbid, the loss of a sibling and obviously just the loss of a loved one, he talks about the loss of his younger brother. And I didn't realize when he took, was it his rookie year?
Yeah.
Well, there was some drama surrounding him his rookie year about how he was kind of depressed, the Shirley Temple story, and being asked to go off a team road trip when he was on the mend, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all surrounding the death of his brother. And I didn't realize just how young his brother was. He was 13 or 14?
Yeah, I think he was 13, yeah.
And he, as the story says, he was killed when he was hit by a truck in their native Cameroon. And he had to go back. And the story really starts out with how close he was with his younger brother, how he blew off that Luke Mbah-Mute summer or basketball camp in Cameroon. He blew off the first day to go play video games with his brother. He's like, I don't want to go to that. I'm nervous. I don't know anybody, whatever. I'm just going to stay here. And they just kind of stayed and just had fun and played video games. And then his father came home. They played FIFA. Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah. And they just stayed there and played the video game. And then their dad came home and he was like, what the hell? You're supposed to be at the basketball camp. Get out of here. Go to the basketball camp. And he went and his life changed forever after that.
Mm-hmm.
And he then moved to the United States. He said he didn't see his brother for about 3 years. And even when Joel Embiid was on the mend, his brother was in the United States, but he was on the East Coast when Joel Embiid was rehabbing on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about what a struggle that was for him to try to get through that time. And I think anybody knows that's lost somebody very close to them, you never really get over it. You just learn how to live with it. And that's kind of what he talks about in the story. And he talks about why that's such a motivation for him now, because he wants to make his brother proud of him. If I'm able to do the things that I want to do, whether that's Defensive Player of the Year, MVP, win a championship, then I want that'll make my brother proud of me. And right, that's the motivation he has. From a basketball standpoint, the story kind of makes you feel as if when he came out with his comments about Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal, when they came out about with their comments about him, rather, he was kind of patronizing him in that post-game interview. And we played the cuts of Joel Embiid listening to Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley, where there was no questions asked. There was no post-game interview. I joked that it was more of a post-game mentoring than it was anything else. And he's like, yeah, I respect your opinion. I got to do that and all that. And in the story, he says he respects their opinion, but he's going to play the game he sees fit. This isn't the 90s anymore, as he points out. You can't be the type of center that's going to the block every single play, every single possession, and relying on yourself to get your points down there. You have to play more away from the basket. That's how he's going to play the game. That's what I got out of that part of the story, where he talks about, yeah, Shaq and Charles Barkley were great, but I got to play the game that I feel I can play, and that's playing away from the basket.
I mean, he's right.
Yeah. Well, he's not wrong. I get it.
But when there's like under 2 minutes to go and they need a bucket, his highest percentage bucket is going down lower in the mid-range game, not chucking a three. So it's situational. Like, he's right, but situationally, he's right.
All right, so he also compared three or four guys that he's watching right now in the NBA that I know Sixers fans aren't going to be too happy to hear that he's kind of trying to model his game after now.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that when we come back. We'll also get a little bit into his ultimate goal, which I think Sixers fans will certainly like. We got Al, we got B-Hawk, we got Philly J. Time of the Fanatic is 6:41.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
9 o'clock, Mark Jackson will join us from NBC Sports Philadelphia. And then 9:30 today, very busy 9 o'clock hour. Jamie, I know a man that's a hero to you is going to be joining us, of Jeopardy fame.
Yeah.
Local product Brad Rutter will be joining us.
Yeah.
I actually had a little message back and forth with a Philly friend. Actually, you know her, Aaron Bollendorf, a good friend of ours from NBC Sports, Sunday Night Football. I think she works Notre Dame games now, if I'm not mistaken. But we were going back and forth because she posted Brad Rutter's Jeopardy thing with to hell with it, I don't know the answer, but go Birds, and he just wagered the Super Bowl score 4,133, and I said nothing's more Philly than I might have just hurt my chance at $1 million, but screw it, go Birds. Like, that's just beautiful. So we'll talk to Brad Rutter about that at 9:30.
He struggled a little bit in that tournament.
I didn't watch much of it because I know you used to.
Yeah, me and Jamie watched it all.
You guys are the Jeopardy aficionados.
Yeah, he struggled mightily.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, but if I know the answer, I can't form it in a question.
That's a problem.
What are Little Debbies?
You tell me.
I don't know.
I just did. I feel like that's really how Jeopardy should go. It's just one question and then two going back and forth. So we'll talk to Mark Jackson at 9 o'clock. 9:30, we'll talk to Brad Rutter. I do want to get this out because it is pretty wild. Also, 9 o'clock hour, we're going to be announcing our cornhole teams. Well, I'll tell you, this year, the audience really stepped it up with their team names.
All right.
They got super creative.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear them.
Trey, one of them actually combined our names.
That's good.
It caught my attention. Let's just say that. It caught my attention as I was going through them last night. Interesting stuff. But to get back to the Joel Embiid quotes from the Players Tribune story, the names that he mentioned of guys that he really enjoys watching, and this came on the heels of responding once again to Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley. He said, "I got nothing but love for the legends of the game like Shaq and Charles. So I respect what they're saying about my game, but I am never going to be the kind of traditional big man like Shaq was in the 90s. You can't go down to the post every single time down the floor and have success in the league. Not in 2020. Not with the way the game has evolved. Not with the way teams double team now. You now have to be able to spread the floor and pass the ball and get buckets all over the court." That's correct. And I do not disagree at all with what he's saying. We all know the game has changed,
yes,
which is why if Joel Embiid wants to shoot a couple of threes, JoJo have at it. But if he shoots anything more than four or five threes, especially when he's only made one of them, okay, you're off tonight. Go down low. Do your thing. Go with the more high percentage shot. Go with the 10 feet from the basket. Hell, a guy like Joel Embiid could be 15 feet from the basket because he can knock down that mid-range shot with regularity. Have at it, big man. But when you are struggling and you're trying to have a handle like some of the greater players of the game, That's when the turnovers come, and that's when the struggles come. Mm-hmm. And that's where these names come in. The names that he is watching right now. KD, Harden, Steph Curry, and CP3.
Okay, yeah, so...
Now, hold on. Whoa, real quick, before you... I laughed. I was sitting at my seat yesterday at the Wells Fargo Center, and I was reading this, and I was going... so then he goes on after saying KD, Harden, Chris Paul, and Steph Curry. He says, for me, that's where the game is most interesting right now. If we're going to win a title, I got to be a little bit of the Dream, Hakeem Olajuwon. I got to be a little bit of Allen Iverson and a little bit of Kobe. That's how it's written out.
Yeah.
Okay, I want a lot more of the Dream.
Yeah, Dream is good.
I don't want any Allen Iverson.
No.
I mean, the fight? Yeah, sure. Be that guy that's hustling on the floor.
Yeah, give me AI's heart in there. Yeah.
And you know what? A little bit of Kobe, because, you know, the man can shoot.
I like the killer mentality of Kobe. Yes.
Black Mamba.
Yeah. I'll take that.
I'll take that all day.
But KD, Harden, Steph Curry, and CP3.
So no big man other than the Dream?
The Dream.
So no Shaq?
There was no Shaq involved.
Can't be a little Shaq?
There was zero Shaq involved.
Yeah.
I want to be a little Shaq.
What about Tim Duncan? A little big fundamental?
Well, he was talking current players, right? The current players is who he's watching.
Who he's watching right now. But then he invokes Dream. He invokes Iverson, and he invokes Kobe.
Yeah.
No Shaq? No dunk on somebody?
Shaq would be good.
I liked Shaq, except for when he beat the Sixers. But those are the guys that Joel Embiid's talking about right now. That's who he's watching. That's who he gives you the feel that he wants to model his game after. He didn't use those words.
Duncan had the mid-range game that I wish he would model himself after.
Well, like, it's not like Joel Embiid doesn't have that.
He absolutely does. Yeah.
But like, when he puts the ball on the floor 15 to 20 feet away from the basket and then tries to back a guy down or cross him over, like Iverson or like Steph Curry with the behind the back. Like, let's be honest. When Joel Embiid dribbles behind his back and does that little slap dribble, you know what I'm talking about? Steph Curry does? Like, stop doing that.
Yes.
That's where you're trying to play the game as a 6'3 point guard. Like, don't do that. Knock that the hell off. Because 9 times out of 10, he ends up turning that ball over. I don't need that from Joel Embiid when he comes back. I don't need really ever to see that again. I just want to see the footwork. The dribbling, trying to be fancy, trying to be too cute, out the window. Forget about it. I don't want to ever see it again.
Yeah, when he's watching film of those guys, the Sixers need to get the film and say, before it starts, admire, and then boom, there's Steph Curry. When it comes to Shaq, emulate, and then he gets to watch. Like, and it should flash all during the film that he's watching. You're just admiring this. You are not emulating this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's a problem. It's a problem that he thinks of his game in terms, if that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
Now, he can say, I just like watching those guys. That's okay. You can be a fan of the game. Don't emulate those guys.
I don't want to see him do that.
And Harden has some of the nastiest handles.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a move that they put on Twitter or whatever the other day, about a couple weeks ago, and it made it look like he was coming up for a shot, but he hit it with the other hand. I mean,
he totally carried it, and they missed it. Is that the one you're talking about?
No, it was something where he looked like he was going to come up for a shot, but then he hit it down with the next hand and then dribble and then another shot. I mean, it was the way he manipulates the ball with his movement. That's a point guard's game. I mean, I don't need the big fella, you know.
Not even a little bit.
Yeah. One of the things that I loved watching about Hakeem Olajuwon when I was a kid was just that a man that big could move like that. But it was all with, like, he never looked uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the crossover dribble you didn't really see from Hakeem Olajuwon.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.